Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to Pokharna Limited's Q3 and nine-month FY24 earnings conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Gavin Desa from CDR India. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Ria. Good day, everyone, and a warm welcome to Pokharna Limited's Q3 and nine-month FY24 earnings conference call. On the call today, we have Mr. Paras Jain, the Chief Executive Officer at Pokharna Engineers Stone, and Ms. Vishwanatha Reddy, the CFO. Before we begin, I would like to mention that some of the statements made in today's discussions may be forward-looking in nature and may involve risks and uncertainties. I now invite Mr. Paras Jain to open proceedings of the call and share perspectives on performance and outlook. Over to you, Paras.
Thank you, Gavin. Greetings and thank you all for joining us today. While you have the financial numbers for the quarter at your disposal, I'd like to share insights into the quartz surfaces industry to provide context for our current financial and operational performance and the future. This quarter, we've seen stable margins compared to the last quarter, with improvements over the same quarter in FY23. This stability and improvement were driven primarily by innovative product design, a strategic mix of product thicknesses, and favorable forex conditions. Our commitment to expanding our product range with more stylized collections and the adoption of new technologies is unwavering. This not only delivers great values but also aligns with our long-term strategy and immediate operational adjustments to market shifts. We are actively pursuing initiatives to cut costs, boost efficiency, and optimize material use. Moreover, we are focused on developing alternatives that lower respirable crystalline silica content in the product, meeting sustainability objectives and market demand. According to the latest National Kitchen and Bath Association of America report, kitchen and bath revenues in the U.S. for calendar 2024 are expected to fall by approximately 3% year-over-year. New construction and remodeling expenditures are projected to decline by 4% and 2% respectively in 2024. Despite a recent increase, the supply of existing homes remains below a balanced market level, with expectations of continuation until mortgage rates approach around 5%. The demand for new homes remains strong, leading to a predicted price increase of 1% in 2024 and 3% in 2025. However, higher interest rates are causing difficulties for smaller builders, thus benefiting large home builders. Our industry, deeply influenced by the perception of quartz countertops as more of a luxury than a necessity, faces heightened vulnerability to economic shifts. The considerable fixed costs associated with producing quartz surfaces bring to the fore the importance of maintaining the sales momentum and managing our financial resources with prudence, especially during the market slowdown. To navigate this challenge, we've embarked on a strategy focused on regularly unveiling distinctive designs and expanding our reach with precision. This ensures we not only sustain our sales volume but also safeguard our margins. In tandem with these efforts, we are working on diligently optimizing our capacity utilization to resonate more closely with market demand and our strategic growth ambitions. Initially, this focus on optimization may slightly compress our margins. However, this is a strategic choice aimed at fortifying our market positions over the long haul. We are confident that this strategy will not only bolster our competitive edge but also significantly enhance shareholder value in medium to long term, underpinning our commitment to sustainable and strategic growth. This approach represents a deliberate and thoughtful progression from responding to immediate market pressure by maintaining sales and managing costs to optimizing operations to better meet market demands to ultimately repositioning our product offering towards more lucrative segments. Each step in this journey is designed to strengthen our market presence and ensure our long-term success. Looking forward, despite short to medium-term uncertainties, I remain optimistic about our prospects. Our flair for design, state-of-the-art manufacturing capabilities, steadfast customer relationships, and our expanding presence instill in me a strong belief in our future success. We are not merely weathering the storm, we are navigating it with precision, ready to capitalize on the opportunities that lie ahead. Once again, thank you for joining the call. I'm now open to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask questions may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Also, we request participants to please limit their questions to two per participant. Should you have a follow-up question, we request you to rejoin the queue. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. To ask questions, please press star and one. The first question is from the line of Dixit Doshi from Whitestone Financial Advisors. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Couple of questions. Firstly, during the last quarter, we have seen that how the Australia has banned the product. So are you seeing anything, any talks or anything happening in the US as well? And my second question is regarding the current problem in the Red Sea. Are we facing the delay in the shipment and also on the cost of logistics side?
Yeah, thank you, Ankit. So coming to your first question, see, Australia, the ban has taken place and the reasons what they have outlined is relatively different and not, we don't necessarily agree with what has been said in the Australian ban. When coming to the US, the state of California has already passed a regulation as to how the products with silica have to be fabricated and handled by the fabricated at their shops. So basically, the regulator in the US, specific to the state of California, wants the engineering controls and the fabrication controls to be implemented by the fabricated at the workplace, which includes like doing a wet cutting or putting the material underwater, submerged under the water and cutting it so that the crystalline silica does not get into the atmosphere and then back into the lungs. And also you are supposed to wear the PPE and subject employees to regular conditions and do the air monitoring in the workshop. So we don't, to the best of our knowledge and abilities, what we have currently in of this situation, we don't see that US would be going the path of Australia because the problem is not with the product. The problem is the way it is processed at certain shops. So I'm not saying that all the fabricators don't process it right, but there are certain fabricators who are still using the rudimentary techniques to fabricate it. If you are fabricating the product under the wet conditions and have the right engineering controls and the PPE and the health conditions being monitored regularly, we don't see any challenges. Because quartz is not the only product which has crystalline silica. Crystalline silica is there even in natural stone. It's even there in certain engineered surfaces like porcelain. It is there in concrete worktops. So by taking a stringent action against a particular product does not solve the problem. The problem has to be addressed at the fabrication level. That is where California has taken a right approach and they have gone about enforcing the occupational health and safety hazard rules for fabrication shops. So that's my take on your first question. Now coming to your second question on Red Sea, definitely yes. Red Sea has not only caused some chaos in the marketplace, it has also caused some incremental cost for both customers and also for inbound logistics for us, like we import a lot of material from Europe for raw material, consumables and other stuff. So all the freight costs have gone up. The transit times have gone up, and because this was relatively sudden when it started, it also created some mismatch. So certain things had to be airlifted instead of coming onto the water. And then the customers also are saying that the costs have almost doubled. So some of them are delaying the shipments to see that the situation, when it normalizes, they can come back to the normal levels. So we also, based on the understanding we have of the industry and with the discussions we have with the liners and the forwarders, believe that Red Sea situation may not really be a long situation, and we expect that next 2 to 3 months, the situation to normalize.
Okay. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sonal Singh Kohli from Bowhead Investments. Please go ahead.
Sir, my question has already been answered. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move to the next question. The next question is from the line of Shikhar Mundra from Vivo Commercial Limited. Please go ahead.
I want to understand about the demand scenario. How is it looking right now? Do you see a revival in demand in the U.S. market? Hello? Hello?
Members of the management, can you hear us?
Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you now.
Do you have any other questions, Shikhar, or that's the only question you have on the demand scenario?
Plus, I want to understand about the Indian markets also, like how do you see our market developing in India?
So, okay.
And, yeah.
Okay. So on the demand scenario, we're seeing that in a quarter or maximum 2 quarters, we expect the demand to come back. We're just looking optimistically to the U.S. elections getting completed, and the demand scenario has also started picking up. As the new home sales are improving, I think as the demand for countertop in those houses come back, things should become normal. So on the demand side of it, we expect in a quarter or another, we should be seeing a positive upturn is what is our sense as of now. We see that hospitality industry has definitely picked up as we were predicting in the past because it was lying low for a long time. But recently the activities of refurnishing the hotel rooms or breaking the new grounds, that's picking up well. Coming to, while the other markets continue to be growing decently well for us, like Russia, Mexico, Canada, and certain markets in Europe are doing good. Now coming to the Indian market, yes, Indian market is definitely an important market for us, not only being in the backyard and our home country. We are taking certain steps now to increase our presence in the local market, and we're tweaking our strategy to go beyond what we were currently doing. We think that next couple of years, we'll be having a strong presence in the local market, and we are building an experience center also in Hyderabad, which can be within the reach of the architects, designers, and the retail consumers. And in line with this, we'll also have more touch points available across the country, either directly or indirectly through our channel partners in medium to long term. So focus for India market is definitely one of our top 5 markets to focus on, and we are allocating increased budgets and the management time on increasing the reach in this market.
But don't you see the pricing can be an issue? Is like, is the Indian market ready to accept our premium products? Because
see, pricing is a perception, and if you are good at addressing the perception, you can still get the price you want to give. Now, do you want to chase volumes, or you want to chase value, or you want to create a brand equity is a part of a strategy. So while I respect your viewpoint, but I believe that there is a way to address all the perceptions, and if needed, we are willing to tweak a lot of things in the process.
Perfect. Thank you. I'll join the queue back for further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Before we take the next question, a reminder to participants that you may press star and 1 to join the question queue. The next question is from the line of Shreyans Jay from Swan Investment. Please go ahead.
Hello. So my first question is, we were made to understand that a player has shut his plant in Israel, and there were some supply issues into the U.S. So just wanted to understand, have we benefited from that? And just on the QOQ side, we're seeing some dip. So what is your perception of how have we done QOQ? Because we were expecting slightly better numbers in terms of your sales.
Let me first correct you. There is no plant of engineered stone in Switzerland. I think you probably were referring to Israel. So
I mentioned Israel.
I mean, probably the phone made it out as Switzerland. In any case, I'll come to the point. So The Israel manufacturer who has shut his plant typically operates in a different segment where we operate, and they are looking at low-cost solutions for their products, and which is not the place where we operate. So our operations are relatively in a different set of customers and categories of pricing. So we have not necessarily benefited from their shutting down the manufacturing facility in the US or Israel, which has been publicly announced. So I don't think anything much has contributed to our success or otherwise because of something happening in Israel.
Okay. And my second question is, sir, what would be your volume growth QOQ or degrowth?
So as we have always maintained, we actually do not give operational metrics out. But what I can tell you is that we have a capacity which we can still absorb. And the reason for while you would have done some factoring of Q on Q growth, but I have always consistently maintained that we are at least a couple of quarters away from seeing a bounce back in the volumes. So how do we counter the bounce back in the volume in the short term was our strategy of introducing new products. That's the reason you see that while the volumes have not significantly grown compared to what has happened in the quarter before, the margins are still intact because we are not chasing growth at the cost of margin yet. And we believe that we are still about a quarter or two away from the volumes to start picking up.
Okay. And so my last question is on the India market. So you mentioned that there are various options that one has to consider. So just wanted to understand, what is our strategy? Where do you see Pokharna? Do you want to chase volumes? Do you want to create brand equity? And the other part to this question is, you know, we're seeing houses 30, 35 crores selling in India. So are we looking at, you know, connecting directly with the developers and, you know, getting them on board? How are you thinking on that part of the business?
So we have a go-to-market strategy for India market. So India, of course, if you look at a 35 crores house, what is the cost of a countertop in the kitchen? Maybe 4 or 5 lakh rupees. So not necessarily 35 crores is translating into a crore rupees for a company like us. Because our product has a application which is predominantly a vertical application or a horizontal countertop. So it typically addresses that, you know, our share in the high-end dwelling does not necessarily mean that we'll have 20-30% or 10% of what the cost of production for or manufacturing of that construction for that house could be. But having said that, we have done a lot of high-end houses in India. We do several projects, like we've done large banks, US banks, offices in India. We have done large projects where we've done about hundreds of villas, high-end villas, where a product has been used as a kitchen countertop and the wall claddings. We are also working aggressively to work with certain prestigious developers to bring a product to their projects. Apart from expanding our reach in the domestic market through kitchen and bar dealers and selective retail channels. So we don't want definitely to be a product which is available at every nook and corner, because we are working to create a product which is desirable and available with dreams, and it's not easily, it's a luxurious product. It is not an off-the-shelf product like a tile that you go to 100 tile shops and you'll find the same product at 100 tile shop. That's not our market strategy. So we have a different go-to-market strategy, which is largely in line with what we see the established players doing in the Europe and US markets.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. All the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Akshana from Vivo Commercial Limited. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Hello. Hi. I wanted to understand the product market mix, basically, how American market is doing better, if it is doing better than your other markets, or if there is a specific market which is driving growth and any market which is, you know, taken back.
So see, basically we are the largest exporter into the US of quartz surfaces, and US continues to be our primary focus. So while there could be a temporary few points here and there in the US, but US continues to be our main market. Growth in other markets like Canada and certain parts of Europe, Mexico is growing quarter on quarter, and we are quite positive about it. And we believe that our presence in the US with our distributors and our strong relationship with our customers for whom we private label and the new markets what we are tapping will definitely give us good positive growth in the next couple of quarters.
Okay. Can you tell me the percentage of revenue that you are currently getting from America?
So as I said in the previous calls also, over 90% of our revenue comes from America.
Okay. So we were planning to launch some new designs in America, as you mentioned in the last con call as well.
Yeah.
Where are we on that front? Can you see any visibility of when you can launch the same?
We've already launched, and as I covered in my opening remarks, we continue to launch. So the next launch is scheduled in end of this month in Las Vegas at KBIS.
So are you, what percentage of, or even if it is in your own internal computations, are you expecting it to add to the margins in a significant way by next year?
The new product launch always will add to the margins. Now, how successful the new launch would be, it takes 6 to 9 months for us to figure out. So while what we have done in the past is already reflected, and I hope the same would continue in the future as well.
Okay, because in the previous con call you mentioned you're taking it things month on month basis. So I was just wondering if you're seeing a larger future at this point in time.
So for next quarter or two, I continue to have the same view what I've had in the past. But I have a very strong view that after a quarter or two, the forecast or the visibility would be relatively longer term.
Okay. My last question was on the CAPEX on the Euro plant. Where are we on that front? Is it done, and should we see results in next quarter or so as we predicted before?
I don't think we predicted the results to come in next quarter or so. The shipments are under are already on water, and certain would be leaving it. So we expect that Q3 FY25 or Q4 FY25 is when both our CAPEXs of two different technologies to commercialize. So we have to start installation of the machines, and then the hot run, cold run have to get completed. The R&D has to get completed. So I think I would say that probably last quarter FY25 is when we'll have a very larger visibility to give you as to when will the revenue start flowing from that CAPEX.
Okay. Okay. And last quarter you also mentioned about the US Bar Association. When you were expecting a 12 to 18 months lag period, do you have any update on this front?
I'm sorry, I could not follow what you said. Can you please come back?
Hello?
Yeah, please go ahead. Your question was not clear to me. Can you rephrase it?
You mentioned about US Bar Association in the last quarter. Right, but you were expecting the second half to be better because there is typically a 12 to 18 month lag with the home improvement front of US Bath Association.
I think you are referring to National Kitchen and Bath Association of US.
Yes, that's right.
So basically, see, a house typically gets completed between 12 to 18 months period. That cycle cannot be contracted just because the market has started picking up, because there is a construction process and the way that you start putting foundations and the roofing comes and the interior come, and countertop is one of the last members to enter the house. So I believe that the period of 12 to 18 months when the house starts getting constructed, that's when the demand for the countertop would come. So I don't know what the question is, but that was the context in which I made the comment.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from Rishikesh Bhagat from Kotak Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
On your call. Hello. Yeah, thanks for the opportunity, morning. So just on your comments about potential improvement of visibility 6 months down the line or 9 months down the line. Now, if I look at it, say, going forward, is there any scope for us in the sense you also mentioned that we have fair bit of capacity also. So fair to assume that the operating leverage benefit is yet to kick in, if assuming the demand scenario betters from here on. And so to that extent, probably margins, there's a reasonable scope for margins also to improve from here on.
Hrishikesh, if you pay attention to the comment I mentioned, while technically what you said that operating leverage would kick in as the volume goes up, yes, if we are able to add more of the mid to high-end design which we recently launched and they get which is already in the market and they start picking up, then the additional operating leverage would come up. But if you look at one of the comments which I made that we are also working on diligently optimizing our capacity utilization to resonate more closely with the market demand and our strategic growth ambitions. So in the short term, it could slightly compress our margins, but we believe that compression could actually open up more doors because we may add some new customers where we will be able to push in all these mid to high-end products. So once this mix of capacity utilization with certain new customers getting on board and the new designs picking up, once this mix gets stabilized, the operating leverage will definitely peak out from what you have seen in the latest peaks.
Okay. The second question is just related to this regulatory headwinds or probably related to safety and health regulation. Now, specific to U.S. market, is it going to be a state-specific or do you think what happened in California, what has passed, it will get, in the sense, replicated in other states or do you think it will be a state-specific regulation?
See, America is a different type of a country. So predicting what they do is a type of doing crystal gazing. But with our experience and understanding, usually the certain regulations are at the state level and certain regulations are at the federal level. So what California has done is actually a good thing and we would definitely want it to be replicated in different parts of the US, whether through a state initiative or a federal initiative, because that is making sure that the fabricating workshops are actually following the OSHA guidelines. So I don't think it really impacts anybody in the industry as a manufacturer as long as the OSHA regulations are complied by the fabricators. It is not a negative. California regulations are actually regulating the fabricators and not the manufacturers.
So I'm not saying it's negative. I believe it's definitely in a good direction, great direction. Just the perspective here is that do you feel that are any other states pushing for much stringent regulation in lines with Australian? That's why the question was.
Usually what we have seen with our experience in US and also what has happened to other. The toughest state is California and they have already started the process and they are going in the right direction. So whether it was P65 warning to you pick up anything you buy in California, you will see a warning behind it. Because they have already taken us, not only our product, even if you buy a toothpaste, you may probably end up seeing a P65 warning. Or if you buy a phone also, you may see. So California has got a very stringent regulations in the way they look at things. So I think the toughest state has taken a right position and we believe that other states would do the same.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pritesh Chinda from Lucky Investment. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry to ask this again. I missed what is the update now on that changes in Australia with respect to the product?
So basically, engineered stone in Australia has been banned. So if it is an engineered stone which has got crystalline silica, then the product is not supposed to be fabricated in Australia. Of course, you can cut it in India and install it without creating any dust in Australia because product when it is installed does not emit any gases for that matter and does not give out any crystalline silica. That's the update on the Australia side of it. Coming to the California side of it, the regulators have passed a regulation that the fabricating shops have to process all the materials, whether not only quartz on top, but also natural stone countertops, porcelains, quartz, everything which has got silica in it to be processed, crystalline silica in it to be processed in a particular way, like doing a wet cutting or submerged cutting and monitoring the air quality, ensuring that the employees are wearing the personal protective equipment. All those things have been passed in California.
So now in Australia, the market is fed with cut products all over the world going into Australia, or the engineered stone sales itself have declined?
We don't actually sell to Australia, so I'm not sure we have a complete picture of what's happening there. But what I can tell you is that there are different substitutes available in the markets which may be taking it, or maybe people in the in future may start taking the fabricated products. So I currently do not have more visibility of what's cooking up in Australia.
Okay. And my last question is with respect to, for us in terms of capacity utilization improvements, you're mentioning that all these new designs that you've put up and whatever is the market status in terms of demand, you see things changing after a couple of quarters. That's what you have mentioned, right?
Yeah, so I believe that demand uptake probably would come in later Q3 of the calendar. So that's what our assessment is, and that's in line with whatever we've had some discussions with our customers, and also with the US election getting passed by the time and little stability coming to the market. And I assume that the Fed rates, as they have been paused, will also continue to pause for some more time, and then the housing market starts picking up, and whatever uptick has happened in last quarter or so would also start giving out more visibility for the market players, and then also the inventory stabilization would have largely been completed, which was happening, and this Red Sea situation would also be behind all that.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next question is from Anuj Sharma from M3 Investment. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. Few questions. One is in terms of machine technologies, apart from Britain, are there other Chinese competing technologies or other technologies which are producing as good as a quality as the ones Britons are? Just how is that shaping up in terms of technology? Hello?
Yeah, so coming to your question, see, basically Breton was the original inventor and holder of this technology of producing Breton stone, also called as engineered stone of quartz surfaces. So over a period of time, certain Chinese have copied the technology and created some replica. Based on our understanding and our belief, we believe that Breton is the best in the sector, and the innovation and research what they are bringing to the table, because what Chinese are copying is something which was developed by Breton maybe 5-10 years back. But what Breton is now doing probably is relatively new and different. And the way the product comes out completely as a fully manufactured one, we believe that the product is differentiated with the way it is processed, the way it is cured, the way it is polished is substantially different from what would a typical non-Breton factory would do it. So there are people who understand the difference between a Breton factory material and a non-Breton factory material. But then there is also a sect of people who believe that material is material and there is no differentiation in the technology. But we continue to have a strong belief that Breton is differentiated from the non-Breton.
That's helpful. My second question is in terms of supply from Britain. I think it's also expanding its output or machines to many other suppliers. So how is the supply from Britain machines increasing over the next 1 to 3 years? Some outlook there.
So Britain will continue to sell the machines to whoever is able to pay them. So while that does not mean that it is off-the-shelf technology or ready-to-buy a product. So typically a Breton product can take, a Breton plant can take anywhere between 15 to 24 months before it is commercialized, and we have not seen any reduction in that timeline. So I don't know how many plants they have sold in which part of the world, because that's not our business. But what I can tell you that there, we have not seen any reduction in the lead time for a Bedden plant to be commercialized.
All right. And my third question is, you know, one part is the machine. The second part is the design. Now, these designs, are these institutionalized or are these purely a function of people who work in the organization? I mean, can there be a chance that a competitor pulls over a few of these people and he's able to replicate those designs, or is it more institutionalized than that? The ability to create newer designs. Some thoughts there.
See, I think the copycats will exist everywhere. People may come, people may go. So that does not deter us, because this is not something which is new. So your ability to think differently, I think we are blessed to be humans, and humans can think always differently. So while some people may come, some people may go, but the thought process, the flair for design is in our DNA, and it's not just in the DNA of 1 or 2%. It is in the DNA of every team member. So I don't think people moving or competitor doing some unethical practices to get hold of certain designs, certain people in a illegal way would create any long-term debtor. There could be a short-term nuisance, but we know how to handle that legally, and we are also working on our intellectual property protection in the long term.
Thank you. Next question is from Harshil Setia from Ladder Up Wealth. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. If you can just help us with, what is the capacity for quartz surface as well as granite, and what is the utilization level currently?
I think your voice was breaking, so can you please come back?
I just wanted to know what is the capacity for quartz as well as granite, and what is the capacity utilization currently?
I think I can tell you partly of it. Our capacity is close to 20 million square foot in quartz, and we have capacity which can be utilized further on the quartz side of it, because the markets have been a little tepid for some time, and in a quarter or two, we believe that markets will bounce back and we'll be able to come probably to a better capacity utilization. On the granite, I think the numbers are self-explanatory, and there's a good amount of capacity to be utilized.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amay Chedda from Banyan Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. Just if you could throw some more color on the competition that we are facing in the US, which are the major countries we are facing competition from?
So basically, in the US, our business model is two-pronged. One is that we have our own distributors who sell under Quantra brand in certain states, but not across the US, but certain specific locations in certain specific states. And then we have our customers who are large brands in the US with locations almost spread throughout the US, for whom we private label the product. So when we do a private labeling of the product, we typically are not competing with any of these brands, because they are actually our customers, but they would be competing with all the big boys of the industry who may be manufacturing their product in America themselves, or bringing the product from Europe or certain parts of Asia. So when it comes to Quantra as a brand, which is where we compete with a lot of local brands of the US who are bringing in the product again from Asia or Europe or within the US itself. To name a few, like all the big boys, you name it, like Silestone, we compete with them. We compete with certain other players coming out of Europe. Our competition is, we don't consider our friends from Southeast Asia or from India as a competitor, because their products are on a different footing compared to our products. So while they may be value engineering us, saying that, okay, if this is from Quantra, I have a substitute available from my portfolio that could be relatively priced low. So we are not actually chasing those type of customers, because our customers are largely in the mid to higher end servicing, but there's a large market at the bottom of the pyramid. That is something which we are not chasing because it's a bottomless pit out there.
Okay, and has this competition increased in the last couple of quarters or maybe the last 2 or 3 years?
Yeah, because I think, I believe there is definitely an excess capacity which has been built up in India, so people don't know what to do and how to sell the product. So they go around selling their product without understanding what the market needs or what the market demands. And when they have a lack of understanding of the approach towards the market, that's when they create certain, I don't know how to put it, but a playfield which is relatively confusing for some. But we have been used to all this type of things because even before we were, when we were competing with Southeast Asian countries or European countries, there were certain players who were working on a different type of marketing strategy, but we could effectively handle them with our own strategies of going to the market with a unique product, stronger relationship, standing with the product, and being unique completely. So basically we are trying to ring fence our competition and trying to create a blue ocean type of a strategy rather than being on a red ocean side of it.
Thank you. We'll take that as the last question. I would now like to hand the conference back to the management team for closing comments.
Thank you so much, everyone. I look forward to catching up again on the year-end numbers. Have a great day. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Pokharna Limited, that concludes the conference. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect your lines.
Thank you.